Paul McIntyre on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania.
I'm speaking with Greg Groden. He's one of Australia's leading sports journalists. So this is your third book about cricket, is that right?
Yes, I've done other ones on Jack Fingledon and also Chuck Fleetwood-Smith, who was a test cricketer who ended up at Derelict. So back on the cricket.
This new book is called Cricketers at War, Cricket Heroes Who Fought for Australia in Battle. Before we get on to the book, which is really why we're here, I want to start just at the beginning of your life. Can you tell me where you were born and raised?
I was born in Adelaide, South Australia. I lived there till I was 13. Then my parents bought a rice farm out in the middle of the Riverina. So my teenage years was fighting snakes and growing rice out in a place called Collyambly, in an irrigation area. And then when I was 18, I got a job at the Sydney Morning Herald. Worked there for 35 years, and since then been freelancing, but I'm back at the Herald again writing columns.
Tell me something. I've never ever talked to anyone who was involved in or around rice farming. How is that?
We had a relative who lived in the area and had been a rice farmer, but no, my father had a basic idea, but he had to learn quick because he was always wanted to be a farmer. Mm-hmm. That's why we left Adelaide. And at that time, rice was a pretty productive, pretty strong financial crop. So he took it on and learnt very quickly. We all learnt very quickly, you know, the unusual ways of growing rice. Most of the times we did it was flying crop duster planes. You used to drop the seed into the water, and that's how it grew.
Tell me, what was your connection to sport growing up?
Well, I grew up in Adelaide, which is a very strong AFL town. My father was a very good footballer, played in the local league in South Australia, so I played Aussie rules at a young age. Out in the country, sport plays a very, very important role. It's sort of like the psychiatrist of the thing. On the weekend, people could get away from the toughness of being a farmer by playing sport. So I played cricket, Aussie rules, rugby league. We're in an unusual part of New South Wales, which you could almost call was part of Victoria. Aussie rules football was as strong as rugby league, so we doubled up. Saturdays playing Aussie rules, Sundays playing rugby league. And it was a break from farming as well. And a lot of farmers delighted in playing sport. It just gave them that break from the you know, the concern and the worries of not having enough water, and you're worrying about your crops, and you're worrying about your produce, and you're worrying about if the cows are getting enough and the sheep are getting enough feed and so forth. So, yeah, so that's how sport became a very strong part of my life.
So as you were growing, what did you entertain or imagine you might do as a career when you were an adult?
I was hoping to be a writer of some sort. I was hoping to become a journalist. I was very, very lucky, actually, because it was the last year the Sydney Morning Herald employed kids straight from school, so I didn't have to go to university. So since I started at the Herald in 1978, the day of the Hilton bombing, so I always wanted to be a writer of some sort. And I also had this incentive because the English teacher at school did not believe that I could become a writer. She wouldn't even let me do advanced English at school. I went to a very, very tiny bush school, which had 400 kids from kindergarten to year 12. So there was only 10 in year 12, you know, three boys and seven girls. So it was a very, very small outfit. But they didn't want to let me do advanced English. So it was a bit of a spur to show this English teacher that I remember going to a 20-year reunion and said to her, I said, look, you know, you really angered me not allowing me to do advanced English. Here you go, I've already written four books. What have you done?
So what did she say?
She didn't say much. She didn't say much because she knew that I had her. I had her. No, it was a spur.
Yeah.
No, I was a bit narked off that I wasn't allowed to do advanced English. But anyway, I've adapted since then.
That's a movie moment, you know. That's one of those movie moments where, like,
yes,
I'm going back in time and I'm going to let that person know. Wow.
Yes. No, I told her. I told her what I thought.
Amazing. So you started at the Herald, in those first few years, what was the biggest challenge with working at the Herald as a junior writer?
The biggest challenge first was that you weren't getting much money, which made it tough to live because journalists weren't paid that well. But the most important thing I learned in the early years of the Herald, and it's, you know, it's made me, and something I always thought of ever since, is the importance of accuracy. Like, I was always going to become the sports writer, but what they did, they used to put me in for 3 or 4 months grabs as a sports cadet, and then you did news, you did courts, you did everything. But what they had me doing the first few months of my career was going to every race, dog and trots meeting and sending through the results. And it was very important that you were accurate, that you did not make a mistake, because in Sydney, the SP bookies would rely on the Herald as the starting price in the paper. What we wrote in the Herald had to be 100% correct. So it taught me the importance of accuracy, because I was so scared if I got something wrong, if I got a starting price for a dog or a trotter or a racehorse wrong, it would affect all the SP bookies. A lot of them were sort of connected in organised crime. So we were worried that if you got something wrong, if you had the wrong price, which the SP bookie had to pay on, they could be waiting for us at the front door of the Herald to knock us off because we've cost them money. So that was very important that I learnt early on the importance of accuracy. And that's the most crucial point is, you talk to journalists, is, okay, you learn to write, but first you've got to be right, 100% correct. You know, newspapers are supposed to be, properly record the facts. So that's what that's my early memories of being a journalist, is making certain I got everything right. I quadruple checked, 5-6 times checked everything to make certain it was right.
I've been speaking with Greg Groden. He's the author of many books, but his newest book, Cricketers at War, Cricket Heroes Who Fought for Australia in Battle. You continued working there for many years, and you were the chief rugby union correspondent.
That's
right.
Years. Yeah, so it's an interesting thing, because even though I played AFL and rugby league, I branched into rugby union primarily to see the world. And that was the main reason why I took on taking up rugby union coverage, because the great thing about the Australian rugby team is that they play everywhere. They play in some marvellous parts of the world, such as France and the UK. If I covered rugby league, rugby league is not as popular internationally. They play a little bit in northern England, a little bit in Papua New Guinea and New Zealand, that's about it. Whereas with rugby union, I've seen all of Europe, I've been to Africa and also many times, and also South America's Argentina's very strong. So I don't hide the fact that I decided to become a rugby union writer to let the Sydney Morning Herald pay my way around the world.
That sounds reasonable.
Yeah, well, why not?
Absolutely.
Because, I was covering AFL football for them for a while, because they'd actually thought I should be writing AFL because I'd played it at a high level.
Yep.
The furthest I ever got was Geelong. So
you're like, this isn't working for me.
There's a big difference between Marseille and Geelong, let me tell you.
Okay, so let's fast forward. So you've built this career and you start writing books, because you've written 13 books.
Yes. Yeah. I've always wanted to write books. So my first one was written in 1991 about a test cricketer, Chuck Fleetwood-Smith, who had an unusual life. He ended up being a derelict for quite a while, and that was a very popular book. And then I've done quite a few rugby union books on the Wallabies. I also did a Rugbies for Dummies book, which was a very painful experience, because it's a tough one to do, Rugby for Dummies, but I did it. And then did the cricket books when I can. So
You can't wash over that. Why is it painful to do Rugby for Dummies?
Now, because the Dummies books are a very interesting format.
Yeah.
They basically tell you that a person has to pick up a Dummies book and be able to immediately understand it, no matter what page they flick onto.
Oh.
So you've got to write in very, very simple terms.
Yeah.
And what they basically do is they get an editor who has no knowledge of the game. So they will ask the craziest questions. Like, they would basically say to you, you've got to tell me what a football is. I said, what do you mean? You've got to explain in the simplest terms what a football is. So you've got to go right back. You cannot assume anything. So it's like saying, what is air? That's very hard to explain in simple terms. So was a football? You had to explain the offside laws. Everything, how the tackles, you've got to really think differently. It actually made me think a lot harder about the game, and to describe it is a real pain. It was like you send off a chapter, and about 3 days later there'll be about 400 queries.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, no, it's an interesting experience. It was. But still, it's our world. And the lucky thing about that one, the Rugby for Dummies, we did English editions, Canadian editions, a USA edition and so forth. So it's one of the ones that did pay very well. So I can't complain. But it was, you got to think completely differently for anyone who's, if anyone's asked to do a Dummies book, it's an interesting experience, but it can drive you nuts.
You're listening to Evenings on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania. My name's Paul McIntyre.
I'm speaking with Greg Groden. He's one of Australia's leading sports journalists. For more than three decades, he was a senior sports writer with the Sydney Morning Herald. So we fast forward and we're here at this new book. Beautiful cover, really beautiful cover. Cricketers. I don't know why I can't say that word. Cricketers at War. Cricket Heroes Who Fought for Australia in Battle. Tell me about what brought this book to come into your life.
Well, it had something to do with a book I did a couple of years ago called Wallabies at War, which was as the Wallabies is the Australian Rugby Union team, and they had a lot of incredible stories of footballers who had very, very, extraordinary war stories. So I wrote that a couple of years, and I thought the natural sequel is A Cricketers at War, because but it's been mentioned in parts about, some cricketers who went well in war, but it hasn't been compiled into one book, because particularly with cricketers, Australian cricketers have been involved in so many different battles. We had some of the Boer War, both World Wars, Vietnam War, Korean War. And I just thought, as there were so many interesting people involved in war, but also some very important people were killed at war, that it deserved a book to get it all into into one volume. So that's why I went on to it, because a lot of people recall that after the First World War, the 1919 AIF team was very crucial in getting the game going again after war, and the same thing happened after the Second World War when the Australian Services team toured England and Australia and revived the game after war. So and it involves some very famous people like, Keith Miller, who would for many Australians be their favourite cricketer. He played a major role in the Australian Services team in 1945.
Tell me, how long did it take you to research and write this book?
Oh, this has been sort of on and off for many years, but I'd imagine it's probably full-time would have been the last 18 months. It was a lot of work going through a lot of records, quite a number of trips to Canberra to go through the National Archives and the War Museum. The War Memorial's got some great things there, so plus ringing people and so forth. So I'd say the last couple of years I've been working on it to get into shape.
And tell me something that surprised you that you learned while you were writing the book.
Well, I was surprised by some of the people who actually did fight. And I was surprised by the animosity the 1945 Australian services team got when they came back to Australia, and they'd been on such a long tour of England and so forth, and they didn't play well. And I found it intriguing that after some fairly indifferent performances by the Australian services team here in Australia, that the press started ripping into them, saying they were weak. And I thought that was very surprising, considering the patriotic angle that the papers were digging. But they were sort of basically saying that the Australian services team should have been playing a lot better. I found that surprising. But also, what is most surprising is some of the extraordinary acts of bravery. And there was probably the most surprising story is a guy by the name of Graham Williams, who played for South Australia. And he was a POW during the Second World War. And within 10 days of him being, he was allowed to get, when the Americans came in and rescued him from the POW camp, within 2 weeks he was playing cricket again.
Oh my gosh.
There's another story here. Bruce Dooland, who was a commando, who was fighting behind enemy lines up in Burma. He was back playing cricket within weeks of returning to Adelaide. Like, they just took it in their stride. Like, some of these people went through the most horrific of wars, but as soon as they got the chance to play cricket, they did.
Yeah.
Like, there were stories of, Keith Miller, who was a fighter pilot. He would be involved in an important raid over Germany. Then he'd land home, and then within a day or two, he's back playing cricket.
It'd probably be somewhat therapeutic, don't you think?
Oh, no doubt. Yeah. There's no doubt why they did it. That was what it reminded them of, that there was still something worthwhile to go. This is what we're fighting for, for the possibility of again playing cricket.
You see in the book that there was a gentleman, Tony Dell, who went on to Vietnam, and he was very gentle when he went there, but returned quite transformed. Can you say a little bit about him?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Tony Dell's a really interesting story. Tony Dell was a big, tall, 6'9" Queensland pace bowler, and unbeknown to a lot of people, because he didn't start playing Test cricket till after he returned from Vietnam, and a lot of people didn't realise that he was at Vietnam on the front line, and he suffered a pretty tough war. He saw a lot of enemy and his own soldiers killed in battle. Then he returned back to Australia about 1968, I think, and it was, as he said, it was as if I'd just gone down the road and gone to the shops and come back. No one took any notice of me, and he had no therapy of what he went through. So, And he didn't realise to about 20 years later that he was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And to the extent that for years on end, and even to this day, he only can sleep about half an hour to an hour per night because of the memories of what he went through. And now he's focusing on trying to help people with the similar, what went through with him in helping them. So he's really heavily involved in trying to make certain that people who suffered that are getting looked after.
Yeah. Well, tell me about some of the women that you write about in the book.
Well, there's a chapter on women. Betty Archdale was a very well-known character here in Sydney. She was one of the best-known headmistresses. She had an interesting war. She was an English woman who captained the first English tour, women's tour here in the mid-30s. So she ended up just going head of the Wrens in Singapore, and she just got out before the fall of Singapore there in 1942. And then she sort of went back via Africa and ended up back in London. And after the war, she came and lived in Australia and became a very, very well-known identity here in Sydney, pushing women's cricket. There was also two sisters, Margaret and Barbara Peden, P-D-E-N, who were also heavily involved in getting women's cricket going before the Second World War. And Barbara, I think her husband ended up in a POW camp. She did a lot of work during the Second World War in getting information out of POW camps so they could tell, you know, the parents and the wives, you know, where their members of their family, what prisons they were in, and try to get supplies to them and all. So there was, there's some very interesting women cricketer stories in it as well.
Did her husband ever come back?
Yes, he did. He spent virtually all the wars of POW camp in Germany, and he did return.
That's good. Mm. Well, I've been speaking with Greg Groden. He's the author of many books, but his newest book, Cricketers at War, Cricket Heroes Who Fought for Australia in Battle. It's not only a beautiful book, but it's really interesting. And I can't thank you enough for giving me some time today.
No, my pleasure.
To talk about your life and your book.
Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you.